This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Phase 3 clinical trials for the Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine or CoronaVac in children under 12 actually began in Malaysia at the end of October. And this is also coming on the back of news that the Pfizer vaccine has been found to be safe and effective in protecting children between the ages of 5 and 11 in the US. So there's a lot of anticipation about what this means for children of that age group here in Malaysia. But what we want to focus on today is vaccine trials being carried out in such young children. What does this mean? What concerns do parents have and what questions they should ask in order to make an informed decision about enrolling their children in trials like these? And my guest today, Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University of Malaya Medical Center, to help us understand these. How are you today?
I am good.
I guess the first question people would ask is, should vaccines, new vaccines, or perhaps in a broader sense, new medications and drugs, be tested on children at all, especially those below the teenage years, considering they're so young?
I will say yes, definitely it does need to be tested. The reason why is because actually we really do need to protect the children from dangerous diseases. And children are the very population that we need to protect, these very young ones. And the purpose of any trial is to do that. Vaccines, for example, as you mentioned earlier, it is to protect and prevent a disease that's severe enough to cause harm in the population. And it has been tested and provided to children for many years. And by virtue of the fact that this is actually the population that we really need to protect from illnesses. And routinely, we know that children make those trips to the doctors for their vaccines, protect them against conditions that are so dangerous that can cause death and illnesses. Let's take, for example, pertussis. So Malays call this batuk kokol. Chinese Singsays call it the 100 days cough disease. Very distressing, can cause deaths in very young children. Polio, cause of acute paralysis. This would have been a condition that was almost eradicated, but we saw this resurgence in 2019 due to vaccine hesitancy. So we would not be able to protect the children from the disease if few people are vaccinated, and we cannot vaccinate the population of children if we don't test these vaccines in children. So that's why when you ask whether we need to do any trials or tests in children, it is a firm yes. We need to protect them. What better way to protect them? By knowing the type of best armory, or by knowing what best medication. And the only way we can do this is to look at the benefits, the risks, by having a test done specifically for the population of children.
Why wouldn't you just test on adults and say scale down the dosage? You know, maybe you can explain why such an approach actually, you know, it doesn't work that way. You don't look at kids as just a mini size of an adult, right?
No, yeah. That's what people always say. Children are not mini adults. They have a very different kind of physiology. If you were to look at the side effect profile, and if you were to look at how children's metabolism works, it's actually rather different in terms of how things work inside them. Let's say we were just to say, okay, I'm just going to give 1/3 of the dose that's usually given in adults. But what the other thing that we need to see is not just the dose. We need to see that the dose, it is a mini dose, yet effective enough to make this work. And the mini dose that we provide should have a very low risk profile. I mean, it is not risky. It is safe enough to be provided to the child.
So, you know, when it comes to members of the public, parents deciding mm-hmm. whether it's safe for their kids to participate in a trial like this, of course, we know that all the vaccines in history came about because they had been tested and gone through these trials among children at some point. But as a parent, mm-hmm. that fear in me says, well, I don't want my child to be the lab rat. So what mm-hmm. assurances can you give parents in terms of that safety that you're talking about? COVID-19 vaccines are so new. How do I know it's safe to be tested on my child?
Well, the first thing is that when you talk about participation in any trial, it really does require the willingness to participate. And I need to inform everybody that trials that are conducted in children are the ones which require the most rigorous of processes. And that is where research ethics committees and monitoring bodies play crucially important roles. They approve, they monitor the trials, and this is because children are the very ones we need to protect, like I mentioned earlier. By saying this, I mean that we need to protect children from the harms of the condition, as well as the potential risk of any intervention or the trial that we want to conduct, be it the vaccine, a new medication, a new type of surgery. So it's via the fact that we have these committees in place. And I know people say, oh, I wouldn't want to be my child to be a lab rat. But if you were to look at the profile of, you know, the persons who actually participate in clinical research, these are usually persons who really believe in solid science. And there is a high element of trust that needs to be there. So the researcher need the children and the participants. And trust there, it is a really important element of good research. For the researchers to gain the trust of the research participants, they need to ensure that these researchers themselves are credible and accountable. The researchers should believe in their research, and the researcher must treasure their subjects. So much so commonly that researchers themselves would be very distraught if, let's say, there's a harm, there's a potential harm that caused their research participants. And it really, really takes a lot of proven science before we conduct any research in children. So usually, like for a vaccine trial that's done in children, they would have to have evidence that it works. It would have to have evidence that it had demonstrated very minimal side effects in the laboratory, minimal side effects in animal experiments, as well as minimal side effects in adult healthy humans. This is unless it is a procedure that's solely targeted for children, because the condition is not seen in adults, for example. So then you may have to target the children almost right away. But as I mentioned earlier, we would usually take an approach that is called minimal risk for research conducted in children, meaning the risk is known, but it is detectable or treatable, and it is monitored well. So this is something that is essential in any good research. So like what I mentioned earlier as well, this minimal risk may be a mini dose of a medication, but it has to be effective enough is what the researchers would seek. Like, for example, you would want to test a mini dose of the vaccine, but you must make sure that it is effective enough. Because if, let's say, you test this dose and it doesn't work, then basically this would be something that is useless to be provided to children. For any trial, we need to show that it works, and that's why it needs to be done.
All right. So with COVID-19 vaccines that are being tested in children, for instance, mm-hmm. that it's on the back of proven science, like you said, that it has been tested in the laboratory first, on animals, and in adults. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
So let's look generally at any vaccine trial for children. How are children typically selected, to participate? Mm.
So like what I mentioned earlier, before any trial is conducted, it would have had to have gone through the rigorous process after being scrutinized by persons who are neutral to the research in question. And what you asked just now is when it comes to selection of research participants, which type of children? So basically, when you think about the type of children that we need, most of the time would be depending on the research question. It would be if, let's say, we say, okay, I want to conduct a research that is targeted to the person who is at highest risk of developing the condition, then probably you would have to target the person who is at highest risk, those with comorbidities. Or will it be a person who are well enough, but yet they can transmit the condition to other people who are at higher risk of getting the condition? So these are the questions that a researcher should ask when they design the trial. Because they feel that when the selection of the research participants is not just based on, okay, I'm going to select everybody who is admitted to my unit, for example, but then you would have like some sort of a bias population. So you should actually select the participants that would be most befitting for the people that you want to target your medication for. There's no use like you select research participant whom you're not targeting the medication for. Yeah.
And in the case of vaccines, usually they are to protect, all children, aren't they, healthy or are vulnerable?
Yes. Yeah. So in that respect, then you should try to include everybody. Let's say you're saying that I'm going to just select somebody who's vulnerable, then you would be missing out those who are healthy because you need to see the response. Because like the vulnerable ones who have certain illnesses, like for example, those who are taking specific medications like steroids, for example, they may demonstrate a different response as compared to those who are healthy. And we do see this in COVID, where those who actually are immune suppressed, they may have even longer period of illnesses with COVID compared to those who are healthy, where the period of being sick is actually shorter compared to those whose immune systems are not so good.
Let's go for a quick break now. And when we return, we'll look at what actually happens in the vaccine trial for children. My guest today is Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University Malaya Medical Center. We're discussing whether it's safe for children to participate in vaccine trials. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. On the Bigger Picture, I'm T. Shawik. Today I'm speaking to Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University Malaya Medical Center. So in light of news that Malaysia is conducting phase 3 clinical trials for Sinovac among children under 12, we're discussing what concerns parents may have about vaccines being tested in young children. Before the break, we discussed why it's important for new drugs and vaccines to include children in the trials, because children are the ones that we want to protect from the deadly diseases, and we want the vaccines and medications to confer benefits for children. Now, Dr. Azana, perhaps you can walk us through what exactly takes place during a vaccine trial, or maybe even before it actually begins, so that we can all be familiar and remove any misconceptions about how vaccine trials are run.
Okay. Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, the first thing is that when a researcher designs a trial, they would put it through to a research ethics committee. The research ethics committee will be comprising of professionals who are neutral to the research in question. and they would look at how the trial should be conducted. And they will look at the method, and they will also look at the criteria, like, for example, what is the method, what's the purpose of doing the trial, and they will look through all these processes, and they will try to safeguard the child. So this is the role of the Research Ethics Committee. They will need to see whether there is a stop trial criterion to ensure, like, for example, that they should stop a trial if, let's say, there is already evidence that the trial works or there is evidence that the trial doesn't work. So when we say clinical trial, it means that the clinical trial may be designed in different ways. So, like, for example, the design might be in a way that you may receive the medication or the vaccine, or it may be such that you receive something called a placebo or a fake drug or something like that. But the main important thing is that regardless of what you receive, there should be a way where there is a monitoring. Because for most trials, the benefit for the research participation is that you get a closer form of monitoring.
Yeah, in fact, there's an advantage conferred on you if you're part of a trial, isn't it?
Exactly.
You get VIP treatment almost.
Yeah, because you sort of automatically enroll in a type of monitoring system, or some people call this a data registry. Where there will be like a close monitoring of side effects. And if the medication works, you will somehow get the medication, and you will also avail of the benefits of the medication or the vaccine. You get prevented from the illness.
And does the research team continue to check in on the kids after they've received the vaccine? How long are the kids followed up for?
So it all depends on the design of the trial. So most of the time for children, when it comes to children, the unique thing about children is that these children are developing. Babies will have developing organs, and they grow. And you can see the difference in terms of their outcomes later, in 10 years, in 15 years. So most trials would actually follow up children for at least 2 years or longer. Some even follow up children until they have reached their teenage years. And most of the time, what the follow-up is for is actually, again, to safeguard the best interests of the children. So a good study will usually have a very clear pathway to report the adverse events and also the criteria to say, okay, I'm going to stop and report this trial. Because it's like what you're trying to do, like, for example, a vaccine trial, you're trying to test the life vest rather than giving you a medication to save you after you have already drowned. So what basically we want to see is that by wearing this life vest, how long can we protect the child for? In most studies, they will say, okay, I will need to monitor this child for a good few years and see how long I can protect this child for. Or if, let's say, I have provided the vaccine, can I monitor this child for a good 3 years and see whether a child is protected from severe illness for a good many years before we probably need another booster. So most of trials would have a follow-through of a couple of years, not just months. So you would be able to see the immediate effects, and after that, a further follow-through to report any good effects after 5 or even many, many years later.
But vaccines start to be administered to children even before that minimum 2 years of follow-up, right? So how do we know that it is safe for the general population of children if we haven't had that 2 years or 3 years of data in terms of longer-term safety issues?
Most of the follow-through are actually not for the side effects, but actually for the protective effects.
Is that because side effects would be seen within a much more immediate period?
Exactly. If you were to talk about most effects of medications, the side effects especially, it's usually acutely. It's usually during the initial period of providing the medication rather than a long-term side effect. So the long-term, although yes, you are going to monitor both any potential adverse events that maybe occur many years later. But most of the previous studies of previous vaccines of previous medications do not show that. So most of the medications that if they do actually have adverse effects, and even if you were to pull out a Panadol leaflet and you look through the adverse effects and things like that, most of adverse effects actually occur earlier rather than later. So the later follow through is mainly to see whether the protection is sufficient or whether there are further outcomes like when it comes to growth or development of a child. But most of the time, we don't see this kind of adverse events. And the other reason why some particular medication is rolled out earlier rather than wait until the full follow through of, let's say, 1 year or 2 years is because there is a need for earlier rollout. And the need for earlier rollout is because the benefit of providing the medication or the vaccine earlier far outweighs the benefits of waiting until a long-term follow through.
And that would be the case in a pandemic like this.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
What kinds of questions should parents ask before they give consent for their kids to participate in a trial? Maybe, just very briefly, a general checklist that parents should come and, because they do need to find out information first and not just blindly agree. So what could they ask the researchers?
Yeah. So when, before they actually consent, the parent or the legal guardian should have very good understanding of the purpose and the method of the research. So these are the two main focus of the questions that they should ask. And it is important that the researcher provides this information, they convey it in the light of the relevant information. And they shouldn't be intimidating you or threatening you. And the parent actually should not feel obligated to consent, or just because the person who asks you is your best friend or the doctor who had saved your child's life. Probably, yes, you can trust the person better if you know that they understand their research very well and are credible enough to help you to protect your child. But the main thing is to find out what these things are. And of course, as to whether this research has been reviewed by the Research Ethics Committee member. And in Malaysia, we've got the committees which sit in the Clinical Research Centre office, and as well as locally within the university hospitals. And any trial, you should be also asking, do you have an easy access number to contact the researcher or the center which does the research? So usually, before conducting any research, we will actually usually say, okay, so look, this is the number that you need to contact. And if there is at any point of time that you feel that you are worried or want to know a little bit more, you can contact this number. And finally, you should also find out who monitors the side effects. Is there a stop trial criteria, for example? Who can you contact in the event that you think that there is something wrong, or you think that probably the medication that you've been given is not okay for your child. So in summary, basically what you need to ask is, number one, the actual method, what you need to go through, the approval process, the monitoring system, how long, what you asked just now, and who you can contact if you face any problems.
And to upfront also make sure that the research has been approved by the ethics committee, as you mentioned.
Exactly.
Actually, is it parents or legal guardians who give consent, or kids themselves?
Well, the legal guardians are still the parent. But yes, it would be absolutely great to get the willingness of the children themselves. But this is not easy. So this process, if you have a child who's old enough, has adequate understanding, get him or her to participate in the decision making. Actually, we have a term for it. It's called assent. What we get is sometimes actually even the child himself telling the parent, "Hey, what la? I understood that, you know. I really like to volunteer. Hey, you didn't understand that, mommy," or something like that, you know. So sometimes the children themselves understand it better. Because when we talk about assent, it's the expression of willingness to participate when the children themselves are not quite able to provide a legal consent. So definitely easier for bigger children, not so easy for the small ones because of their state of cognition. But actually, even the small ones, they do understand to a certain degree. My son, for example, he says that, okay, after getting his seven-year-old jab, the MR and the DT, then he said, okay, now he can go out because he's gotten the jab. Although there is some sort of misconception there, but they do understand to a certain degree.
So as long as it's tailored to their level of understanding.
Exactly. So what Research Ethics Committee have been trying to do is that for many research that's related to children, we do encourage the use of diagrams, cartoons, so that the children can understand this better.
So that means in the process of obtaining consent, legal consent from the parents, the researchers should at the same time explain it to the kids to get their assent.
Exactly. Actually, both parents and the researcher should assist each other in helping their children to understand their role in research. So we really like this process to be improved, especially from the researcher side, because sometimes they try to explain it to children, but they use all the jargon. So we would say, okay, do you think you can try and make this leaflet a little bit more easier to understand?
Generally, how is Malaysia's track record in conducting vaccine trials in children? Do we typically conduct these trials?
Okay, we don't really have much experience, but you might be surprised. Yes, we actually have participated in quite a few trials, and we did in fact participate in a blinded placebo-controlled phase 3 study of a dengue vaccine back in 2012. And the results of the study done in Malaysia didn't report any death, fairly satisfactory safety profile. But what the Malaysia's National NPRA, Drug Control Authority, although they did provide conditional approval upon reviewing the data in various other countries, they had specified that the study failed to verify the clinical benefit. And if the fourth phase doesn't verify the clinical benefit, not conducted with due diligence, any registration will be withdrawn. So you can see how strict our NPRA, our ethics committee is in ensuring that the children are safeguarded. So they actually have a very huge role in assisting the parents and assisting our own Malaysian population from having an adverse event.
Yeah. What would be your one main message for parents when it comes to enrolling children in clinical trials?
Okay, so basically, by participating in a trial, you can actually help provide valuable data. It will help make a difference in terms of treatment, in terms of prevention of a disease. If we do not propel further scientific knowledge in children, we will never be able to find a cure, or we will not be able to know more about how best to manage conditions specific to children. In future, we really hope that this will be second nature to help research, because we know that we can, and we can have trust in the system that actually helps to safeguard your child. And at the same time, by doing this, you can assist the progress of research. What we should remember is that all good research will be reviewed by credible and trustable ethic committee members. And these members would actually have already helped you to weigh the risks and benefits. But how you do this yourself is that should you be asked to enroll in any trial, ask the right questions. Know that the burden of the risk is shared between you and the researcher. Find out about the safety profile that has been provided to you. Find out in detail the science behind the research that was provided to you, and especially about how your child will be monitored.
And a final message about COVID vaccination for children. How should parents weigh the risks and benefits to make the right decision?
So when it comes to providing vaccine, you need to know that your child is the population that needs to be protected. And at the same time, they can become as ill as anybody from COVID, from illnesses. And vaccine is that armor, is that life vest to help protect your child.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Azana. I've been speaking to Dr. Azana Ahmad Kamar, consultant neonatologist from University Malaya Medical Center, about vaccine trials for children and how children are protected when these trials are carried out. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.